Welcome to Inclusion Matters, produced by the Center for Inclusive Childcare,
aka the CICC.
We're located at inclusivechildcare.org.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast of the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Cindy Croft, director of the center, and I'm here with Priscilla Weigel again. Hi, Priscilla.
Hi, Cindy. Good to be here.
And we're so excited because we're doing another podcast with our guest from the Minnesota Department of Human Services, Nicole Fretham.
Hi, Nicole.
And Nicole, you're probably thinking, oh my, I'm never going to get out of here. But
we just keep asking her more and more.
It's so interesting. Nicole is a policy specialist with the Minnesota Child Care Assistance Program. And we've been, the first podcast, we talked about the whole Child Care Assistance Subsidy Program. And in podcast two, Nicole, you really laid out the special needs rate in Minnesota. And both of those programs are very important to families and child care providers and teachers in Minnesota. And so we really want to now spend a little bit more time again in the special needs rate and helping people who might be listening, either families or child care providers, understand maybe if they've never used it, how they even get started and what it would look like if they were to enroll or apply. And so we'll ask for your expertise again and sort of opening all that up for us. And we've got some questions too, so.
Sure, I'll start by just walking through the process. So this would be for a family that's already on the Child Care Assistance Program who has a child with special needs and whose provider has said, I have additional costs to help meet this child's needs and I need additional funding. If that's the situation you find yourself in, the first step is to complete the special needs rate variance request, the parent and provider request. That is something you can request from your Child Care Assistance Program worker, or you could go to the Department of Human Services website at mn.gov/DHS and go to the Department Searchable Document Library and search for the form 4194, which is the Special Needs Rate Variance Request, Parent and Provider Request. Parents and providers should work on completing this form together to document, you know, the child's special needs, what extra interventions the provider is doing and the extra costs they're incurring to care for this child, what training they've done. And then the parent should help the provider gather documentation from an outside source like an IEP or an IFSP or information from a doctor assessment or a psychologist assessment to explain what is, give that extra verification of that need. That information all needs to be sent to the child's caseworker, the Child Care Assistance Program worker, and then within that agency that's administering child care assistance for that family, they need to complete a special needs rate variance request, the county recommendation. So the county will review the information and make a recommendation on approval or denial, and then that whole packet gets forwarded on to the Department of Human Services.
Okay.
And there's a team of us at the department, and we work also with staff at the Department of Education that are very familiar with special needs and disability accommodations and rules. And we review the request together and determine the child's level of need, whether the provider is meeting those needs based on their description. And then we evaluate the rate that we can pay based on those needs. And we have a special protocol that we use to try to be fair and objective in that assessment. Once the department receives that packet from the county, it's usually about 30 days for us to do the full review and make a determination. If we determine that the rate can be approved, we'll send a notification to the county, and the county should pass that on to the family. We will also do updating in our payment system, and what will happen is the parent and the provider should get updated service authorizations, and they should go back to when the rate was requested. So we will go back, not to when care began, but to when the rate was requested. And payments can start at that higher rate going forward. And if the provider had charged a higher rate back, they can issue billing supplements to that provider. So it'll, once it's approved, what happens is it just changes the rate that you can be paid as a provider, and you will just bill that higher rate on your on the billing forms that you get from the county.
Okay. Let me ask a point of clarification. So the provider and the parent ideally fill it out together. So, at, and they send it to the county worker.
Yep.
Can the county worker refuse it?
If the county recommends denial, that they should still send that whole packet to the state because we make the final determination.
The county or the parent provider?
The county. The county should still send their recommend. So they don't make a final determination. They can recommend to approve or deny and send it to us.
Okay.
We will still do the final evaluation. We do look at the county's recommendation, and we consider whether we have enough documentation and evidence to, you know, approve one that they suggested we deny.
Okay,
or,
great.
Or vice versa.
That's good to know because I had. You know, I had thought that it could stop at the county level, so that's good information for me to know that it goes on, still goes on to DHS.
Yeah,
from that
it
point.
Shouldn't stop at the county level. So if that's something, you know, that you know what I described is the process as it should happen, but there you know there could be steps along the way that are tricky, and we encourage families and providers if they're experiencing a holdup in one place or another to contact the Department of Human Services Child Care Assistance Program directly so we can intervene.
Would it ever be possible for the county worker to send it back to the provider and say, I need some clarification, and then send it back to me before it goes on to DHS?
Yes.
Okay.
That's something that the county worker could do. And actually, we really encourage county workers to review the evaluation, one, because they're making a recommendation, but also to make sure they're complete, because if they pass something on and there's no documentation or the documentation is really outdated, we're not able to move forward. And we have a firm commitment to making a decision within 30 days. So if we get something in and realize we don't have the documentation we need to even review it, we'll contact the county or the provider or the parent and ask for that additional documentation. We typically do that to the county and ask the county to follow up. But if we don't get that information by that 30th day, we just automatically have to issue a denial.
Okay. Good to know.
So make sure that that request is complete and you have all the information with it. You know, we don't prescribe specifically what it needs to be, although, as we've said, having an IEP or IFSP is... We very rarely need more documentation when we have that. Sometimes with doctor's assessments or psychologist assessments, we may ask for more if it doesn't give us a picture of how that care would need to be modified for the child to participate.
Okay, very helpful. Because I think so, oftentimes too, I mean, your point about having the provider and the parent fill it out together, it can be a daunting task for one to do alone. And so it really is a great, you know, partnership to go through that whole process and feel supported through it, because it's going to make a difference for each of those people, the parent and the provider.
Absolutely. And part of it is, you know, that agreement that, you know, this is what your child needs. You know, is the parent recognizing, my child needs that. And the provider saying, here's what I'm going to do for them, and I'm going to be paid a higher rate. So that it's someone there, the parent there, to say, you said you were going to do this, and we requested this higher rate. You need to be
doing
this.
You need to follow
through.
That's a really good point.
And kind of on the other end, I was thinking, too, it would be helpful for a provider sometimes to see when they sit down and start to fill this out that actually in their when they enroll a child with, again, sometimes people see a disability and they think, oh my, this is going to involve A, B, and C. And then when they actually start to write a plan or start to think about care, they realize, oh, this is, I'm making these adaptations that are typical adaptations I would make for any child, and it sort of gives them a different perspective and helps them see that it's not as much as maybe they had thought they were taking on. So I think on both ways, it's very positive.
And how about just looking at that payment piece kind of as we wrap things up, and I know that that's challenging because providers want to be paid for the work that they're doing when they're doing the work. And I know that you're talking about these 30-day processes and that type of thing. So how does that lay out?
So billing and payments in general for child care assistance, providers select where they want a 2 or 4 week payment process or time period. And they'll get bills that either cover 2 weeks or 4 weeks. And at the end of that billing period, so if you've been providing care for 2 weeks, the last day of that 2 week period, you can complete the billing form and submit it to the county. The county then has 30 days from when they receive that form to issue payment. Mm-hmm. So the special needs rate doesn't change any of that processes. It just changes the maximum amount that they can pay to a higher rate. So it's always in the best interest of the provider to fill those forms out as soon as the billing period's done, submit them. And, you know, there is that turnaround time, and we recognize that can sometimes be a barrier to accessing the program, that the payment comes after the care has been provided.
But as you said earlier in, I think, another podcast on this topic, providers can talk to DHS and for support or for just to ask questions about this whole process or and I think it's nice to know that they can call you and they can call us at the CICC. We've got information as well to help people walk through this, but going right to DHS is I think would be extremely helpful.
And we also have for providers a provider guide.
Great.
Accessible on our document search on the DHS website as well. We encourage providers to keep up with that. A lot of county agencies send them directly to providers, but not always the most updated one. So we encourage providers to look that up and to access it if they've got questions. There is information about the special needs rate and that process in our provider guide.
Okay.
If you've got general questions about child care assistance or questions about a case, we encourage you to reach out to the county caseworker servicing that servicing agency. But if you're having problems with the county agencies, our role at the state is to supervise the county administration of the program. So we are a resource. If you feel like your payments aren't happening within the allowed time frames, if you feel like you're not getting the information you need to serve families, and specifically if you're having issues with special needs and needing higher rates and not knowing how that process works or getting held up at the county level, that's where we can step in at the state and facilitate a conversation between you and the agency.
Nice. Great. That's wonderful. And we will provide that link
in our
description of the podcast and the discussion questions, because that's really helpful.
Yep. This has been so helpful, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's
we
been
appreciate
great.
It. For having me.
I know the people listening will, this will be one that I'm sure has been extremely helpful to them.
Yes.
Thank you, Priscilla.
My pleasure.
That's all for now. See you next time.